Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, May 25th, 2022. Some political parties in South Sudan complain about civic space in the country.
They go through too many restrictions, too many impediments for political parties to organize a single meeting, let alone organizing a rally that can bring thousands of people together.
And Amnesty International says South Sudan and Somalia lead on the list of countries practicing death sentences.
A sharp rise in recorded executions in Somalia and South Sudan was the reason why the overall number of recorded executions in sub-Saharan Africa more than doubled from 16 in 2020 to 33 in 2021.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some political parties in South Sudan are complaining about what they call lack of civic space and a legal framework in the country, which hinders mobilizing people for general elections scheduled to take place earlier 2023. The parties blame the Kiir administration for shrinking the democratic and civic space in its favor. For VOA News, Viola Elias has more from Juba.
At a 3 days political forum in Juba that kicks off yesterday, several participants said the political playing field is unfair in South Sudan. Paulino Lukudu Obede, head of the United South Sudan Party, says political parties other than the ruling SPLM party are limited in their efforts to engage with citizens. Obede says the political atmosphere in South Sudan has been militarized. He says in several state-organized forces do not allow members of civil-led political parties to hold rallies or meetings.
They go through too many restrictions, too many impediments for political parties to organize a single meeting, let alone organizing a rally that can bring thousands of people together, especially in the states. In Juba, it's restricted, but not that too much. But in other states, apart from Juba, it's very restricted to the stage of the political parties will not operate, apart from the known SPLM. But other parties, the political space is seriously restricted.
For too long, Obede says, the country has failed to practice multi-party politics as stipulated in the transitional constitution. He says this week's forum organized by the Ministry of Peacebuilding will help political parties across the country to lobby for lifting restriction on political activity to achieve a peaceful and democratic South Sudan. He says the time has come for all parties to join forces and engage in peaceful politics.
All politics with the man standing behind with a gun has been put to an end by coming together of these political parties and agreed that South Sudan is tired of the military politics. We have to shift from militarized politics to a civilized politics by allowing a free political space equally to all the political parties, more especially the government-owned television and radio, the SSBC, should also practice this, allow the multi-party system in their platforms.
Peter Lomude, chairperson for political affairs in the National Democratic Movement, says he appreciates that such dialogue was allowed to take place as the country moves towards holding general elections. Lomude says the transitional period will soon expire and the political parties need to be able to speak freely with South Sudanese citizens.
What do you talk about participation and what do you talk about elections? You know, elections, they are meant to be in a level ground where all political parties will be able to compete, you know, equally. Now, as you speak, there are a lot of things that are not implemented, including the question of the security arrangements. Now, we only have one party that has got access, you know, to using the state resources, you know, going to the state to do campaigns, you know, in the name of disseminating peace.
Teresa Siricio, head of Sudan African National Union, says the dialogue has created awareness, especially among parties that were formed after the unity government signed the revitalized peace agreement. She says to date, only 14 out of 62 political parties in the country are registered.
Everybody will be prepared to register their political parties, those who have not registered, and they will be fully active in carrying on their political activities. So I think this is an opener to me. This workshop is an opener for all political parties be aware of all the necessary documents for them to get ready to go for election.
South Sudan in Focus reached out to officials of the ruling SPLM party for comment on the story, but all declined to speak, saying they needed to get permission in advance from their superiors. The forum was organized by the Ministry of Peace Building in collaboration with UN Women to bring together all political parties in South Sudan in an exchange of ideas on how to improve their working relationship ahead of elections scheduled to take place in February. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Amnesty International says the year 2021 saw a worrying increase in the number of executions and death sentences in Africa, with South Sudan and Somalia leading the trend. The rights watchdog is calling for a moratorium on executions and is urging countries that still allow death penalty to abolish it. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Washington.
Amnesty International says the number of executions and death sentences rose globally as courts returned to conducting business in person following the easing up of COVID-19 restrictions. In its annual report of the death penalty released on Tuesday, the overall number of recorded executions more than doubled in East and Southern Africa, especially in Somalia and South Sudan. Oluwatosin Popula is a death penalty advisor at Amnesty International.
A sharp rise in recorded executions in Somalia and South Sudan was the reason why the overall number of recorded executions in sub-Saharan Africa more than doubled from 16 in 2020 to 33 in 2021. Recorded executions in Somalia rose from 11 to 21, and in South Sudan from 2 to 9. In Botswana, Amnesty International recorded the execution of three people, the same number as in 2020.
Popula says underlying factors and beliefs underscore the adherence of some countries to the death penalty as a legal punishment.
The countries that have high death penalty rates mostly have a number of factors in common. They include the arbitrary use of the death penalty, the lack of respect for human rights, bad judicial systems, and the erroneous belief that the death penalty has a deterrent effect on crime, which is not true.
Amnesty says exercising the death penalty in Somalia, South Sudan, and Botswana goes against regional trends in sub-Saharan Africa and the rest of the world, where many countries are moving away from the practice. The report says while 33 executions were recorded in Botswana, Somalia, and South Sudan last year, the overwhelming majority of African countries that have not yet abolished the death penalty for all crimes, which include Kenya, Malawi, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, did not carry out executions. Popola says South Sudan carried out more executions in 2021 compared to the year before, and more people were sentenced to death.
The number of recorded executions in South Sudan rose sharply from 2 in 2020 to 9 in 2021. The number of death sentences also rose in the country from at least 6 to at least 10. At least 334 people were held under sentence of death at the end of the year in South Sudan. It is unclear what has led to an increase in the use of the death penalty in South Sudan in 2021.
Efforts to reach Ben Gideon Mabor, the commissioner at South Sudan's Human Rights Commission, for comment were unsuccessful. The Amnesty report says recorded death sentences were up by 22%, with a sharp rise in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where 81 people were put to death in 2021 compared to 20 in the previous year. It says there was progress towards the abolition of the death penalty in Sierra Leone, Ghana, the Central African Republic, and other African countries. Popola says Amnesty opposes the death penalty in all cases, regardless of the nature of the crime or the guilt or innocence of the perpetrator.
The death penalty is the ultimate cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment. Countries that still retain the death penalty must immediately establish an official moratorium on executions and begin to take irreversible steps to completely abolish this appalling punishment.
Amnesty says its annual review of the recorded global totals for death sentences and executions do not include the thousands of people that the group believes have been sentenced to death and executed in China, North Korea, and Vietnam. Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen also maintain very high rates of death sentences and executions for various offenses, according to the report. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Some members of a group calling itself Sudanese Emergency Lawyers say they are worried about the health conditions of political detainees in prisons across Sudan. Recent reports show majority of detainees in prisons across Sudan have developed health complications. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
The Sudanese Emergency Lawyers, who offer free legal advice to political detainees and their families, said last week it was concerned about the detainees' health and called for their immediate release. Lawyer Amira Abbas says nearly 30 detainees who are members of resistance committees and detained at Pro-Sudan prison in Red Sea State suffer from various health problems, including diabetes. She says prison authorities have denied the inmates an opportunity to seek medical attention, which she says violates the detainees' basic human rights.
They are suffering from underlying diseases and they don't have access to medication because they are lacking medical attention. In addition, the health environment in Port Sudan prison is very bad and they don't have access to pure drinking water.
Earlier this week, Port Sudan prison authorities released four inmates, including a 56-year-old man who suffers from diabetes. The government did not explain why the detainees were freed. Abbas says the group also received credible information from Soba prison in Khartoum, Rabak prison in White Nile State, and Al Jazeera Aba prison in Al Jazeera State that the detainees' health conditions are deteriorating at all three of those facilities.
Some of them have been detained for nearly 3 months, and what we don't understand is whether this is imprisonment or a detention order. None of them have been charged with any offense, but they were arrested and detained by an order from the Security Committee.
Since last year's military coup led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, hundreds of pro-democracy groups and members of resistance committees have been arrested and detained after military leaders declared a state of emergency across the country. Abbas says the detainees include women and children, including a child detained last week who is sick.
The child is supposed to be sitting for basic living examination and he has been suffering from epilepsy, and due to lack of medication and the shock that affected him psychologically, he started bleeding in the police custody in front of the police officers, emergency lawyers, and even in the presence of his mother.
A former detainee who agreed to speak to South Sudan in Focus on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals from authorities says he spent more than 2 months in Soba prison before being released. The man, whose voice is being distorted for his protection, says many young people are suffering in detention facilities. He says they bring us the first meal at around 6 a.m. and the second meal will be served at around 10 p.m. He says they normally wake us up with a beating and they have attendance checklist 3 times a day. We are beaten, insulted, and face all kinds of humiliation. Abbas is calling on Sudanese authorities to immediately release all the detainees or charge them in a court of law. Sudanese prison officials were not immediately available for comment on this story. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Ethiopian refugees in Sudan say they want to return home. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you break bad news?
I break bad news looking at the person's mood as at that moment, whether to tell the person or not. And if you are telling the person, how would the person take it at that moment you are telling the person?
I think when you need to talk about something difficult, you just need to come right out and do it. So if it's bad news, I think just go right ahead and let it be known and say what you have to say and just figure out how to get over it.
Break bad news to people in the gradual process, because most of the times bad news come as a form of a shock to people. So you break it in a form of a gradual process by saying it in parables or using illustrations.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some Ethiopian refugees living in South Sudan say they want to return to their home despite ongoing conflict in their country. Thousands of Ethiopian refugees from the Gambela region who have lived in the Gorom refugee camp in South Sudan's central equatoria for close to a decade say they miss their homeland. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
UNHCR says some 340,000 Ethiopian refugees are sheltering in South Sudan. The refugees, most of whom are from the Anuak ethnic group, arrived in South Sudan before the country seceded from Sudan. 2,200 Ethiopian refugees live in the Gorom refugee camp, located 21 kilometers southwest of Juba. Its population is spread across 11 villages. 40-year-old Ajela Ojulu Omot fled her home in Jurwada of Gambela, Ethiopia, with her children 9 years ago and has lived at the Gorom refugee camp ever since. Omot says she longs to return to Ethiopia and wants the UNHCR to repatriate her.
I choose to go back home because I'm tired of staying here. I have 5 children and I'm the one raising these children alone. I don't have a husband, so I prefer actually to go back home to take these children to my relatives and even the relatives of my husband. I'm tired of staying here.
Ariette Ojulu Obang says she fled to South Sudan with her 8-year-old daughter. 11 years ago from Gambela, her daughter, now 19, is married. Obang says she is exhausted and lonely and longs to return home.
I came with my husband, but when we reached a place called Pachola, my husband died and I became a widow and there was no one to take care of me. I became lonely. Today, it came to my mind that I should at least go back home because I have relatives there who can help me. So I want to go back.
Obang says she also wants to go home because she is HIV positive and worries about her health.
As I am staying here, I am more vulnerable. No one is helping me. No one is working for me. It's me alone. I have HIV, so who will support me? So it will be better if I go back home. If anything happens, let it happen when I am in my home.
Cham Okelo Omuho says he came to South Sudan 18 years ago in 2004. The father of 5 says he dreads the possibility of dying in a refugee camp.
I choose to go back home because you can see my age right now. I'm 85 years old, and even doing any work, it's very hard. You can see the way I am now currently. I'm not even afford to do anything.
The 45-year-old Omot Deng Olara fled Itega of Ethiopia's Gambela region in 2003. When he was 18 years and arrived in Pochala, Omot married, but his wife died while giving birth to their first child.
He moved with his child to Lologo, where he remarried, but says that wife eventually left him. Like most refugees, Odiro says he tries to make ends meet and relies almost exclusively on humanitarian aid to survive. He says insufficient food ratio are one of the reasons he wants to return home.
I'm really happy to go back home because I know that I have not lost all my relatives. The food that we are receiving does not sustain me. That's one thing that is pushing me back home. I want to go back home and dig for myself.
Alion Abebe, the UNHCR Assistant Representative for Refugee Protection in Juba, acknowledges that a number of refugees have asked to be repatriated. He says UNHCR will conduct another survey to establish the exact number of refugees who want to go home, but wants the process of repatriation depends on whether refugees will be safe to venture back to their homeland.
In Ethiopia, situations have changed. Ethiopia finds itself in conflict situations. And so we have, as UNHCR, a global position on return. What does it mean for people to return in areas which are experiencing conflict? Several member, regional states in Ethiopia are experiencing conflict and violence. So in principle, we want to support organized return and facilitate repatriation when certain condition of safety and security, peace is maintained.
Abebe says the UNHCR is working with the Commissioner of Refugee Affairs to update the list and determine who is interested in going home. He says the agency will also hold conversation with the governments of Ethiopia and South Sudan about all the refugees who intend to return home. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi in Juba.
Today is Africa Day, the day on which the Organization of African Unity, known now as the African Union, was formed in Addis Ababa in 1963. The establishment of the OAU championed the continent's freedom from colonialism. But analysts say Africa is far from economically free, with hundreds of millions of its people poor and hungry. For VOA News, Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
According to the World Vision Group, which monitors food security across the globe, almost 300 million Africans are undernourished. It says bad state policies, climate change, local conflicts, and the war in Ukraine are causing even greater hunger across the continent.
This day is supposed to be celebrating independence and unity. What the war in Ukraine has exposed is that we are not independent, but dependent, and not unified, but in conflict. I think part of the illusions that were exposed over the last 30 years is that simply proclaiming political independence does not make you independent.
Chris Alsobrook is director of the Center for Leadership Ethics in Africa at South Africa's Fort Hare University. He says when it comes to food security and nutrition, Africa's a long way from being sovereign, even in countries that in the past were recognized breadbaskets of the continent.
For instance, 70% of Kenyans are feed insecure, 70% drop in crops with climate change problems. Egypt, 80% of Egypt's grain came from the Black Sea region before this war. It's caused a serious problem. And in fact, because of food security problems up the Nile in Ethiopia, they've dammed up half the Nile recently. And so there's increasingly dire prospects in Egypt for them to feed themselves and to remain in any sense independent.
Also, Brooks says even South Africa, the continent's second biggest maize producer after Nigeria, is sleepwalking into problems. He explains that the country isn't producing enough food and is in even bigger trouble because of the war in Eastern Europe. A quarter of its grain came from Ukraine, and it remains dependent on the rest of the world for half its required wheat. It's also Brooks' opinion that Africa's hungry largely because its people want what he calls the wrong foods.
We've become dangerously dependent on wheat and maize. we don't eat enough vegetables. You'll find we have large tracts of land that are either sugar or canola oil. And these things have gone through the roof. They're massive staples. We need to rely on more variety. We can grow more vegetables. We don't feed ourselves, but we can. We have the land and enough water and resources to feed ourselves. But it depends on less dependence on highly concentrated agribusiness and government, and more variety in our diets.
Partly to combat the fallout from the war in Ukraine, South Africa's government recently announced what it calls an agricultural master plan worth more than $1 billion to boost food production. But based on previous plans, says Osebroek, he's skeptical of government intervention.
It's often very incompetent. And as soon as the state responds, it often involves tenders. And as soon as there's tenders, the money just dries up. It's a mistake to believe you can just throw money at the problems. It's about disciplined cooperation. I think it's this problem of dependence, seeing the state as a solution and not us as the state.
He believes that Africa's ever-present and growing food crisis reveals many Africans are at the mercy of often incompetent and corrupt governments as much as they rely on international food aid. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now end this show with Kan JJ and the song Konkel. We've been listening to Kan JJ and the song Konkel. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking your time to be with us this evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.